I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it's the economy, stupid. Simone Del Rosario with Straight Arrow News joins us to make sense of what's happening in the markets. Plus, it's primary election eve and turnout is very, very low. And Governor Jay Inslee compares one of his climate policies to perhaps the most important moment in American history. We'll discuss that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Also, be sure to join us for our live primary election night coverage coming up Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We're coming to you a little late today, not live either. It's funny because we had a big tech issue today, which I'll describe momentarily, but we ended Sundays with subscribers yesterday by previewing election week. And I had a little bit of a mental health breakdown, just hoping that everything was going to go fine. It's going to be an exciting week. Everything's going to be great. Totally. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
I hope.
It's going to be great. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. Okay, anyway.
It's going to be exciting to get past the primary, that's for sure.
It's going to be fine. Yeah, so I almost think, Nicole, that was a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. No, we were totally ready for the show today. In fact, more ready than normal, I would say. Like, everything was great. We were just smooth sailing into the plan for the live show. And then we restarted our central computer system, which we try to do like on a semi-regular basis just to give it a good refresh. And it never turned back on. We shut it down to restart it and it never turned back on. And at the time of this taping, still has not turned back on. So Daryl's on his way in from Bellingham, of course, to get it up and running before primary election day tomorrow. So we don't anticipate any issues. And I know he'll work diligently to fix it, but it's a central computer system that controls like all of our cameras. So you won't see Nicole at all today, controls all our microphones, all our elements, all that sort of stuff. So
the blue screen of death.
We got a blue screen of death.
That's what we got.
That's all right. As long as we don't get a blue wave of death tomorrow, I'm totally fine with a blue screen of death. So let's hope that we've, you know, got it all out of our system today, but we do have a little redundancy. It's not the best redundancy, but it allows us to at least tape something to get it out to you today. So, but speaking of, I just have to start with the ballot return statistics. This will be updated at 5 p.m. They're updated every business day at 5 p.m. So, you know, over the weekend, there hasn't been any updates. So I anticipate a sizable boost, but going into the weekend, ballot return statistics, 15.82%. 15.82% in an election year that's this important. And that just breaks my freaking heart. You know that all the Democrats, all the Bobby Ferg supporters are turning their ballots in. All the Sammy Byrd supporters, you know, they're turning in their ballot too. So I don't know who hasn't turned them in yet, but you got to get, you know, I'll do a little
really
shaming.
That people wait till the last minute. And well, again, do, this but... is why I know that you like mail-in ballots, but I really believe that if we all had to show up in person, I mean, give us the day off, like make it a national holiday. So you, everybody go vote.
Let me understand this. You believe that voting, more people would participate if they had to actually go somewhere on election day to vote, as opposed to having 2 full weeks to fill it out and drop it in a mailbox for free. You think that actually is going to lead to lower voter turnout?
More people that should be voting.
So the people you want to vote would be voting. I'm just going to shame a few counties because why not? Let's see here. Yakima County, 12%. Weak. Franklin County, 11%. Weak. Grant, Pierce. Oh, you get Adam. Weak. Terrible. And basically anyone under the age of 45. So they break it down to age categories. I'm highly disappointed in you. Although I think under 45, there's probably like a greater percentage as you get younger of Democrats than there are Republicans.
Yeah, because you learn to vote correctly.
Because you grow up a little bit, right? So anyway, I, as of 5 p.m., the 15.82% number is going to be irrelevant. But what we know is that it's still trailing behind at this point in previous primaries of this nature. So historically, this is a pretty low number still. So you got to turn that thing in. The people who decide to participate are the ones who get to decide how our state is run and how our counties and cities are run. So if you don't participate, then you really don't have like to stand on if you want to complain about policies. Speaking of, we will have a primary, God willing, we will have our regular election night special. It's happening tomorrow, 8:30 p.m. Pacific time will begin. The first ballot drops, as you know, come in around 8 p.m. We don't like to start at 8 p.m. We never do. We always push it back a half hour because I remember being in TV and everybody was a complete disaster trying to make sense of ballot returns that had come in and were like partial for counties. So we don't do that. So by 8:30 p.m., we'll have our, you know what, together, unlike TV stations, and we will have the best primary night coverage in the entire state of Washington. So again, it'll be across platforms, YouTube and Patreon, Locals, X, and Facebook. And we'll go as long as we need to go. Hell, if things are exciting, we might just stay on until noon on Wednesday, our regular live show. Nicole's like, we will not
it's
be
just
doing
a
that.
Primary. So, come on now.
I know. Excuse me. You literally are the executive producer of a political show and you are downplaying the importance of the primary election and presidential election year. Fired. Even though today, today wasn't your fault, fired. You know, I don't know if it was anyone's fault, really, but here we are. We're still getting going. All right. Something else that happened today, and we saw some indicators of this in the global economy over the weekend. Huge crash on the stock market today, pretty significant. And you know, you always, it's funny because you watch the news and it's sort of one tone and then you get on social media and it's another tone. Like we've talked about indicators of a recession and we talk about that with Zach Abraham at Bulwer Capital every single week on the show, some of the areas of the economy that are weak. And he's been predicting for months that the U.S. would get into a recession. And certainly what happened in the stocks today amid this global sell-off was really unfortunate, not the day to look at your 401k. And then you have some other, you know, smaller points of intrigue, like stocks for Lockheed Martin and people on the internet, again, being like, oh, that's just an indicator that we're entering World War III and Lockheed Martin knows it. So I decided to ask today someone who I think is like one of the most truly unbiased journalists on planet Earth, who specializes in covering the economy, to join us and sort of either, I don't know, talk us off the ledge, or maybe we need to be on the ledge. But I figured Simone Del Rosario, who is a business correspondent for Straight Arrow News, would tell us what's up. Simone Del Rosario, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks. Good to be back. Good to see you, Brandy.
Yeah, well, Straight Arrow News, which is why I expect you to give it to us straight. Should we be having a full-on meltdown? Is it that
absolutely bad? It's absolutely not that bad. Obviously, the reason that the stock markets have reacted the way they have today is because of recession fears, right? But this goes back to Friday's jobs report. What happened is that we woke up this morning and Asia, for the first time, got to really respond to what we saw on Friday, which was a higher unemployment rate than was expected, which triggered a recession indicator. Doesn't mean the U.S. is in a recession right now. But then we saw this massive sell-off with the Nikkei index in Japan, the worst crash that they've had since 1987. So obviously that's super alarming. And then it provides contagion, right? So the US stock market also drops, but this is their second time reacting to the same fear. And on Friday, when they had the jobs report and all of Friday trading to be able to react to it, the S&P only fell 1.8% on Friday. So we are seeing more declines, but we've already seen in the market today from this morning, the pre-trading hours were, you know, huge losses, multiple percent, the Dow down more than 1,000 points. A lot of that's recovered quite a bit. You'll see each of the indexes now is around 2.5% down on the day.
Gotcha. So when we look at, obviously, the stock market is only really one indicator of the health of the economy. And you mentioned, you know, the jobs report being an important indicator. So if we take the stock market kind of and what happened Friday over the weekend overseas and then here this morning kind of out of the equation for a second, and you do look at the fact that there was a worse off jobs report than expected, some of the other things happening economically, I mean, is the economy heading toward recession?
So the person who is behind this recession indicator that everybody was talking about on Friday, called the SOM rule, Claudia SOM, she's an economist. She said that the U.S. isn't in a recession right now, but she is very concerned about one happening in 3 to 6 months. The nice thing about how high interest rates are right now is that the Federal Reserve does have quite a bit of room to force some type of correction. I think it's a pretty unanimous consensus at this point that the Federal Reserve is behind the eight ball on this. They are offsides on this decision. Had they cut last week ahead of the jobs report, they would have looked like they had a crystal ball. Now they definitely look like they're offsides and they're behind the ball. They can cut in September, and they're already pushing out their people right now to try to ease things a little bit, to try to send a message to corporate America, which is where we get that response with the job market or with the stock market, to say, yes, we know a cut is likely coming. And now they may even do a bigger cut than we initially expected just because of these indicators. So there is room to fix what's happening right now. But also, yes, the unemployment rate is much higher than people had expected it to get to. And it is concerning.
Yeah, and not the kind of news that certainly the current administration wants just a few months out from an election. So how do you expect, I guess, not so much Joe Biden, but Kamala Harris to try to message on this? Because the economy is the key issue for voters. It always has been.
Yeah, it has been. And this is an issue that this administration has really lost on for the last 4 years, even though inflation is so close to 2%. We're at 2.5% on the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. So close. It doesn't erase what happened, right? It doesn't erase that we had 9% inflation, and people can't get that out of their heads. And so I really think that Kamala Harris is going to have a hard time addressing the economy just because of how people feel. And then you wake up and see, even though we had record low unemployment at 3.4% not too long ago, now you're seeing this big swing upward. 4.3% historically isn't that high, but it doesn't look good when we've been living in a much lower rate for a very long time.
Yeah, and it's not just how people feel. It's, I mean, how they actually are living day to day. And people have been struggling with the cost of goods. You know, some of that is tied to state policy, not federal policy. So if you're Kamala Harris, I mean, how would you try to message that you could do something different than your predecessor?
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, to your point, people are feeling this way because they're the ones going to the store and experiencing that their paycheck doesn't stretch far enough. It's hard for me as someone who covers the economy to tell people prices going down would be a horrible thing for the economy at this point. That would trigger a recession. It's horrible to say, but it's true. You need inflation. You need prices to continue to go up. Otherwise, companies really pull back. The first thing to go are people's jobs. And that's really going to hurt people. But it doesn't change the fact that especially lower income people are the ones struggling the most because they spend so much more of their income, even more than they earn, to be able to make ends meet. So regardless of how these indicators kind of normalize out, that's just not going to change. I don't have to advise Kamala Harris. I just have to say what's right and what's wrong with the economy. So I'll step back from giving her any advice on this one. When it comes to the unemployment rate, I think this is really a job for the Federal Reserve at this point. This is part of their dual mandate. They are in charge of price stability and they're in charge of maximum employment. And they've been trying to get prices down, and now it's costing maximum employment. So they need to have a correction.
Yeah. So can I ask you about one other stock-related thing? So the internet's a flutter, especially conservative internet folks, about Lockheed Martin stocks, thinking that they're doing well. It's an indicator like World War III is upon us. what's going on there?
I'd like to, hope that there's no recession right now and there's no World War III right now, right? Defense stocks are going to do well when there's a lot of geopolitical tension in the world. And right now we're dealing with two major conflicts, which is Ukraine and Gaza. So Lockheed Martin, just like a lot of other defense stocks, are going to do well in that kind of environment. And in addition, a lot of analysts are loving Lockheed Martin right now, and they just got upgraded in their, like, you know, they upgrade, say, what's a hold, what's a buy. They're like, buy this stock right now. And that's partly because they just started these redeliveries on the F-35. We have a show at Straight Arrow News called Weapons and Warfare, and our military correspondent, Ryan Robertson, actually just did last week's show from the F-35 final assembly line for Lockheed Martin. So people wanted to go check that out at san.com. I mean, it's a full show from there that will explain a lot more about what's happening with the F-35 supply chain, but that's a big part of it. And, you know, anytime there's geopolitical tension, defense stocks are doing well. On top of that, you know, these AI stocks, these tech stocks aren't doing well currently. You know, we've seen Nvidia drop, 20% in the last month or so. So, you know, and Apple, Berkshire Hathaway just sold half of its stake. Tech stocks not doing well. People are wondering where they put their money. They're going to go put it in defense.
Yeah. And so it's like, well, we can't say there's no World War III. I mean, as you said, it is a direct reflection of the fact that we are engaged as a, across the world in a lot of conflicts right now. So there's a nexus there. Now, whether it means World War III, let's obviously hope not. All right, Simone Del Rosario, business correspondent for Straight Arrow News. How can people follow you?
Well, you can follow all of my work at san.com and any of our Straight Arrow News stuff. It's all over the socials, et cetera. And then people can follow me on X and TikTok at Simone Reports and on Instagram at Simone Del Rosario.
So we appreciate Simone Del Rosario's insight. Again, you know, she acknowledges this isn't great, certainly not great for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And we'll see how they're going to spin this, the spin machine. I'm sure somebody was joking on social media today that Kamala will come out and say, I've never heard of Bidenomics. Bidenomics, I've never heard of that. You guys made that up. The media made up Bidenomics. That's going to be exactly what it is. So anyway, yeah, don't look at your 401k today, but hopefully Simone had some good insight for you there. But speaking of, I was like, we got to move up our Bulwark Capital ad read today because, man, is there a better day than to talk about the necessity of managing your risk, especially in the election year, global unrest, everything that's going on. You only get one retirement. You do not want to expose it to needless risk. That is what Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in. They're always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, give you as much upside as possible. You can learn about Bulwark strategies with their free Common Sense Investing Guide. You can get yours by calling 866-779-RISK or go to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. While you're there, you can also find out how to listen to Zach's radio show where he talks about all of this stuff all the time. So when you have a day on the stock market like today, you can approach it with the knowledge that's necessary to understand it. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right. On Sundays with Subscribers this week, we talked to farmers in our state who are not happy. And I do not blame them. About a year ago, we were talking about the negative impacts of the Climate Commitment Act, certainly at the gas pump, at the grocery store, and some of the things that are really harming the middle class that Governor Inslee, frankly, was not honest about. That's not an opinion at this point. He just was not honest in telling Washingtonians that, hey, there are going to be costs associated with this, with these carbon auctions that are going to be passed along to you. He's still not being completely honest about it. So there's the dishonesty aspect, and then there are a lot of broken promises. There are sectors of our economy that were promised that they would be exempt from the financial impacts of the Climate Commitment Act. Yet here we are, a year and a half into this thing, and those exemptions have not come to fruition. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So we'll get to the farmers in a moment, but joining the farmers in feeling like they were either lied to, taken advantage of, or both, is the trucking industry. The Washington Trucking Association has taken a similar stance to the farmers. Both of them were promised exemptions, meaning that the fuel cost increases from the CCA, they would not have to bear the burden of those. But here we are a year and a half later, and they are very much bearing the burden of those. And their efforts to try to get the state to comply with what's written into the law have not been successful. This from Fleet Owner, which is a publication that, as the name suggests, has to do with trucking issues. The headline, Washington climate legislation faces trucking backlash. Fuel used in agricultural transportation is supposed to be exempt from the program for the first 5 years. But after the legislation, fuel costs skyrocketed for fleets moving agricultural goods. Fuel suppliers introduced fuel surcharges in response to the act that did not exclude agricultural transportation. Brian Hildebrand, who's a safety compliance officer for refrigerated transportation companies in Washington, he said it inflated all of their costs. So not only were they not exempt, you know, they're very much feeling the impacts of the financial burden of the CCA. It says after court shot down the Washington Trucking Association's petition for review of the act's execution, the trucking industry is looking to a November ballot to ease the strain of fuel suppliers' climate legislation surcharges. So the bottom line here is truckers, like in good faith in the trucking industry for the past year and a half, are kind of thinking, okay, you know, the state will do what they're supposed to do under the CCA. We have an exemption of the first 5 years written in. You know, the state's like, oh, we haven't figured out how to carry out this exemption. And they've been very patient. I would argue almost too patient in waiting for the state to put that exemption into action. And now they're done. frankly, they're done waiting. And, you know, their legal effort to try to get this taken care of wasn't successful. And so they're now hoping that the CCA is repealed because that's the only option that they've been left with. And we're now hearing similar sentiments from the Washington State Farm Bureau. Bree Elsie with the Washington State Farm Bureau joined us on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday. One of the reasons we had her on is almost exactly a year ago, we had her on the show and the title of that show was Road to Exemption, where she talked about farmers trying to get this exemption that they were promised. And instead, what happened? You know, the state's like, oh, give them $30 million and maybe they'll be quiet about it. And $30 million doesn't even begin to cover the loss associated for farmers who are having to pay these heightened fuel costs. And so Bree Elsie with the Farm Bureau said the same thing that the trucker said on our Sunday show. We've waited long enough, and now our only hope is that voters repeal the CCA in November.
The litigation wasn't to recover hundreds of millions of dollars. It was just to compel Ecology to open rulemaking to fix their broken program.
Right.
And so that's the question that was before the judge. Can we open up rulemaking and fix what is an obvious problem? And like you said, the legislature acknowledges last year by allocating $30 million to agriculture and transporters that there's a problem. Their intent by passing that bill was to exempt everyone. And obviously that didn't happen if in their mind there was at least tens of millions of dollars in damages. And so now what? You know, we have this legislative acknowledgement and now we have this court decision that allows Ecology to continue to be negligent and abdicate their duty under statute. And I think what's unfortunate is I think we see this a lot in the court systems. I think you see this a lot in the court systems. I know you're pretty engaged in different actions as well. Why is our court system an apologist for the agencies?
Yeah.
When you see Nigerian fraud and all of these things happening, yet everybody is remarkably unscathed.
Yeah.
Everybody has their jobs and nothing changes. And they are allowed to continue on with this behavior left relatively unchecked. And I think that's the big frustration here is this just happens time and time again.
So you said what happens next? What does happen next? Are you guys appealing? Is it?
So that'll be up to the Washington Farm Bureau Legal Foundation.
Okay.
And there'll be several pathways presented to them. And there are appeal abilities. There's 30 days to decide whether or not an appeal is appropriate. And you could appeal directly to the Supreme Court. You could appeal to the Court of Appeals. But we know we have this outlier situation right now. We have this ballot, you know, or this initiative on the ballot. And so what do you do in light of something that's polling really well, but as we know in politics, can also change on a dime?
Yep.
So is this program even going to exist after November? It's hard to know.
So look, you know, you guys know how I feel about all of this. At the very base level, regardless of how you feel about climate policy or Governor Inslee and climate policy, if they can't be honest about it, why do they deserve to keep it? I mean, that's kind of what I keep going back to. And we'll get to some of Governor Inslee's dishonesty, continued dishonesty on this coming up in Unbelievable. It's really wild. Some of the things that he's been saying about what will happen, like the sky will fall if we vote to repeal the CCA. But look, if Governor Inslee had owned the policy, said this will impact people, sorry about that, but I think it's the right policy. I'm not sure we're in this environment where you have farmers and truckers and a bunch of people revolting against the CCA. In the case of farmers and truckers, they just feel misled. They feel lied to. They don't feel like they were promised something. They were promised something. They were in the law promised an exemption. But a year and a half later, that exemption is nowhere to be found. They have every right in the world to be upset. I'm shocked that their legal efforts haven't been successful because, again, the law spells it out in black and white that they should get something that they're not getting. And so now they're throwing their hands up and they're just hoping that voters repeal the CCA with 2117 because they don't, a year and a half has gone by and they have no faith that if given more time, the state will do what it has promised to do. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action. Future42.org. All right, if you are in the market to sell your home, I mean, one thing that might come out of this whole stock market plunge is that the Fed feels like it has to absolutely drop interest rates. So if you're a home seller, that might be a good time for you to list your home on the market, knowing that you might have more buyers who are coming in if their interest rate comes down. But still, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com says, since there is such a limited supply of homes on the market right now, if you're thinking about selling your home in the near future, doing it when there's a limited supply is to your advantage.
King County, median $1 million. Homes are still selling very, very quickly. If you want to do something this year, give me a call. I'd love to start the process now. I think that things will be moving very swiftly through probably October. And then as the election starts to come out, you know, get closer, people always pump the brakes. But for all of you who are out there that are thinking like, oh, you know, I can't sell my home because I need X amount, you're probably at the peak right now. You know, it's probably worth more than it's ever been than previous times. So what are you waiting for?
So if you're in the market to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He'll give you a free market analysis, you know, how well your home is positioned on the market, depending on where it's at, et cetera, and comparables. And then you can also just start right there on the website by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. You know, I think of a lot of important moments in our nation's history, you know, moments that all these years later, we celebrate about our freedom and our founding. And 100 years from now, when we look back at the greatest moments for our country, we will remember Governor Jay Inslee and the rebates that he gave electric car buyers. All right, Governor Jay Inslee, he's just out there trotting out all the environmental stuff. And every time he's going to use it as an opportunity to push the CCA. That is his primary and maybe only his own, his lone objective before he leaves office in January, is to make sure the CCA doesn't get repealed. So he's out there, and we've been talking about all the lies he's been spreading. You know, he had a press conference last week where they talked about these $200 rebates that you're going to get of your own money on your energy costs, which is ridiculous, and says, oh, if you get rid of the CCA, then that's like taking $200 away from working families, which again, doesn't make any sense because it's the working families' money that you took anyway, and you're taking way more from them than $200. So this is just a bribe before the election, but I digress. So anyway, Governor Inslee had another press conference. Man, he's having a lot of press conferences, huh? And all those press conferences, he's talking about the CCA. Where he talked about an EV rebate program. So they want you to buy electric vehicles, but people aren't buying them at the rate they wanted. They're not on track to meet their goals. And so now they're like, well, let's just throw money at people. Let's try to make it less expensive for people to buy EVs. So the program means that Washington state residents who are 300% or below of the federal poverty line could qualify for a rebate program if they purchase an electric vehicle. Now, whether that will actually, whether there'll be takers for that, I don't know. But for Governor Inslee, this is really, I mean, honestly, one of the single biggest moments, not just for the state of Washington, but for our country.
You know, they made history in Philadelphia, 1776, where they had a Declaration of Independence. We have a Declaration of Independence from gasoline. It is freedom. And we're giving an opportunity for Washingtonians to enjoy that freedom.
Declaration of Independence. Philadelphia, Governor Inslee, EV rebate program, Washington State. I mean, it's essentially the same thing, right? And the governor was feeling so patriotic when he made this historic announcement that he invited maybe the most patriotic group of people ever to join him in it.
Well, this is such a great day in the state of Washington. I have asked the Blue Angels to come celebrate with us. And I think the Blue Angels are a perfect group to celebrate with, because we can hear the roar of freedom. And when you get an EV, it's absolutely silent. And you can enjoy an electric vehicle. And you can enjoy the thrill of not having ever to buy a gallon of gasoline again. It is a joy. And yes, here they come, celebrating EVs. All right, they're celebrating.
I can't, what do you say to that? What do you say to that? I think that if the Blue Angels had heard the governor saying that, they would have fallen out of the sky in embarrassment. 100%. Oh, my God. And of course, he couldn't wrap up this press conference. He thanked, you know, country, historic moment, the Blue Angels. I mean, wow. And of course, he's got to bring it on home to the CCA.
And that is supported by the Climate Commitment Act. So the Climate Commitment Act is something that allows us to build new EVs. I'm going to halt for a second for the sound of freedom.
I need to point out how hilarious it is that he's at this EV press conference, right? Talking about, oh, we're going to save the climate and all this stuff, EVs, while he's celebrating jet fuel being pumped into the atmosphere. I've always had this deep-seated fear, and I think it's talked about, you know, semi-regularly, that the governor would try to ban the Blue Angels because they're dumping all this jet fuel. I mean, you see them, and it's like all these... It smells. It does smell. We were out there.
For entertainment purposes. Oh, too.
For entertainment purposes. I mean, I don't support banning the Blue Angels. It is like freedom. But I just think it's hilarious that here he is at this environmental press conference, like, oh, we don't want freedom from gasoline, he says. Don't want those fumes pumped into our environment. While literally jet fuel fumes are like raining down on the press conference. And he's like, this is the most wonderful thing ever. Oh, our governor. He gives me some good laughs. I mean, he's deeply dishonest and he's not the brightest bulb, but I get some good laughs out of him for sure. So he's talking about that. Let's try to bribe low-income people to buy EVs that are still very expensive and they still might not be able to afford them, even with the handouts that the government gives them for this. And even though, you know, it's like signing the Declaration of Independence, I just have a hard time believing that, you know, people will think that fondly of it. I don't know. That's just me. But that's not the only press conference that the governor had in recent days where he is using it explicitly to try to build up the CCA and try to convince people through fear, through patriotism, appealing to their sense of patriotism, then appealing to their fear and frustration not to repeal the CCA. So this is for our friends at the Linwood Time. Buckle up for this one, because this might be the most shameless thing that the governor has ever said about the CCA. So we have this whole situation going on with the ferry system. The ferry system is a disaster. We've covered that on the show before. People are waiting hours and hours for ferries, even when they book one ahead of time. It's an utter disaster. Now, why is it a disaster? There's a couple things that are contributing to that. Certainly ferry workers who were fired because they didn't get a vaccine definitely contributed to the staffing issues that we have. But there is this big push to electrify the ferries, and it is just taking much longer than it would have taken to put some good old fashioned diesel ferries out there on the water. But of course, the governor has his reputation as the climate governor he has to preserve. So the Linwood Times explained a little bit of the background here before I get to this quote from the governor. As the state's top government agency, greenhouse gas contributor, 19 million gallons of diesel annually, WSF launched an audacious goal to be emission free by 2050. To achieve this, the agency must convert 6 existing vessels to hybrid electric power, build 16 new hybrid electric vessels, and add shore charging to 16 terminals with an estimated cost of $3.98 billion. So what's important about this is self-imposed. This is one of those goals that really isn't built on anything. I mean, they miss their climate goals all the time. They're like, oh, I don't know, 2050. Let's make our ferries emissions-free by 2050. And how do we do that? So now they're saying, well, now we've got to build these hybrid electric ferries to try to get us there. And it's going to cost a lot of money. And it's much slower than if we had just continued down the path that we were on and making sure that we get something, some sort of new ferry on the water, even if it's not meeting this climate goal that we've just manufactured out of thin air in 2050. It says currently, so how are they going to pay for this, right? $3.98 billion. Currently, $1.68 billion of it is funded through, funded according to WSDOT from the Move Ahead Washington pile of money, and $599 million is from the Climate Commitment Act. It's from the CCA, $599 million. It says, Governor Jay Inslee shared with the Linwood Times the importance of Climate Commitment Act dollars to a cleaner and greener Washington ferry system. Listen to this quote that Governor Inslee gave the Times. We need new ferry boats desperately, and the CCA is where the money is coming from to build the next 5 ferry boats. So if you want ferry boats, we have to have the Climate Commitment Act. It is the only revenue source we have. The governor is literally, he's so desperate, he's literally telling people, if you repeal the CCA, we won't get any more ferry boats. He says, you want ferry boats? We have to have the Climate Commitment Act. He is appealing to the desperation of people who rely on those ferry boats just as much as you and I rely on the highways here to get to and from work. He's appealing to their desperation and their frustration. And he's saying, if you repeal the CCA, we won't have any more ferry boats, which is, of course, a lie. It is a flat out lie. This is a self-imposed manufactured goal. At any given time, they could say, you know what? We have a crisis on our hands. The ferry system is in turmoil. So we're not going to meet this 2050 goal. Let's do what we need to go. By the way, the governor's goal of doing this through new, you know, forgetting diesel, all hybrid electric ferries. It's such a dumb goal. And so contrary to like the desire to fix the crisis, where not even Bob Ferguson agrees with it. Even Bob Ferguson says he would go a different direction and get some diesel boats on the water. And like, yeah, like let's work toward electrification of our ferries, but not at the expense of the operational ability of our ferry system. So keep that in mind. Even Bob Ferguson thinks, well, now I don't know if he actually thinks that or he's saying that because he's running for governor, but even he has said in his campaign for governor that he doesn't like Governor Inslee's plan. So Governor Inslee is genuinely saying, we won't have any ferries if you repeal the CCA. And he's saying, it is the only revenue source we have. Well, that's just not true. As we stated before, of the $3.98 billion price tag, most of it is paid for with other funds. $599 million is paid for with Climate Commitment Act money. But if that goes away, it's not like they don't still have money. And our ferry system is 70 years old. The CCA is a year and a half old. So how have we funded our ferry system for 70 years? How have we funded our ferry system for 70 years? If you're saying the only funding for our ferry system is money that the state just started collecting a year and a half ago. So it's a complete lie. It is based on fear. And this is when I go back to what I said earlier. Even if you support the idea of electrifying our ferry fleet, aren't you offended by the fact, if you live on an island especially, aren't you offended by the fact that the governor is trying to scare you into keeping the CCA? Does that not bother you? Even if it was somebody of the opposite party, would it bother you? I bet it would. So are we so beholden to political party that we're willing to look the other way and say, man, this man has told a laundry list of lies about the CCA, but I'm going to reward him by voting to keep it in November? It's truly unbelievable stuff. It's honestly disgusting. I kind of joke about it because it's so dumb, right? I mean, compares it to the Declaration of Independence, like his climate policy, give me a break, while there's jet fuel raining down on him. And he says, oh, we're going to give you back $200 of your own money in energy rebates. And I'm supposed to be celebrated for that. Says it's not going to raise gas prices. It does. Blames it on gas and oil greed inexplicably. And now he's saying, oh, we won't have ferries anymore. Like the ferry system will just cease to exist if you repeal funding that the state has only had for a year and a half. Now, look, that's about priorities, right? If you are dead set on the electrification of ferries, I'll say I agree with the other candidates in the race that no, like you can move forward with a couple boats that you want to have hybrid electric ferries, but you have to build other boats in the meantime that can get on the water faster so we don't have this crisis. So let's say you go with a plan like Bob Ferguson has, just say. You can have that $1.6 billion in funding that's already there. If you lose $599 million in Climate Commitment Act funding, you can still build electric ferries. You just can't build all electric ferries. So what the governor is not willing to do is compromise on, again, a self-imposed deadline to go emissions free and a self-imposed like 2050 goal that we'll probably never meet because he doesn't meet his other goals anyway. And he's going to do that at the expense of people who rely on ferries to get off the islands. Like that's sick stuff. That's ridiculous stuff. And he should be punished at the ballot box. Because if you don't punish him at the ballot box and repeal the CCA, then he's emboldened. He's like, look at all the lies I got away with and I got to keep this policy in place. And you think Democrats won't make the Climate Commitment Act even harder for working class families if they're that emboldened in November? They absolutely will. It's totally unbelievable. Now, speaking of freedom, however, I know the governor is trying to tie his climate policy to freedom and the Blue Angels and whatever it is. But if you really want to feel free and you really want to celebrate freedom, join us at the Summer Freedom Fest that's coming up. If you guys went last summer, we had Brian Haywood, who's behind the Let's Go Washington initiatives, including 2117, which will repeal the Climate Commitment Act and actually set you all free from the grasp of Inslee's terrible climate policies. He had, like, it was put together in like 2.5 weeks last summer, right, Nicole? I think it was like thrown together last minute. And this was while they were still gathering signatures. He had a Summer Freedom Fest out at his private ranch where everyone who wanted to come was invited. There was hundreds of people there, live music, food trucks, vendors, all this stuff, political candidates speaking. So they're having Summer Freedom Fest 2024. And I have to imagine this one's going to be huge because if the last one was put together in 2.5 weeks, this one's going to be a blast. It's co-hosted by yours truly. Our friend John Carlson over at KVI is also going to be there. There are going to be political candidates there to speak. There's going to be good music, food. Bring your lawn chair. Join us. It's happening Saturday, August 17th, 4:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. You can learn more at letsgowa.com. Just go to their events page. You can also sign up to volunteer if you'd like. I know they're still looking for volunteers. So Inslee thinks keeping his climate policies represents freedom. I disagree. I think repealing his climate policies represents freedom, and we're going to celebrate the eventual repeal of those policies at Summer Freedom Fest coming up two Saturdays from now, the 17th. I just wanted to make sure two Saturdays from now. Man, it's already August. That's wild. All right, we're going to skip past national news since we talked about the economy and the stock market to open the show today. Guess what? We are back with Natchez RV Resort. We talked about Natchez RV Resort in Natchez, back in the beginning of the summer, I think they were doing their phase one grand opening. And the way that that works is they don't sell lots until they're ready to be sold. And so they did an initial phase one. And then as the lots came together, they're now opening up phase two. So they have phase two grand opening pricing starting August 24th and 25th. 18 extra large RV lots. They're starting at just $79,900. And I went out there. Mike and I went out to Natchez RV Resort when we were out in Eastern Washington just to see it. It is beautiful out there. They were just finishing up their massive 4,300 square foot clubhouse. It's got a gourmet kitchen in there, a ton of space. So if you've got family visiting, there's room to dine together, to hang out together, all of that. They had the groundwork in for their pool and hot tub. I took Lucky, my dog. They have a dog park with some, what do you call those skills? You know, like what do you run dogs through the little obstacle course. Mm-hmm. She wasn't great at it. I don't think she's like an athlete of a dog, but it was still fun. Everybody was just the people, some of the first buyers, they were all hanging around together, laughing, drinking, just, it looked amazing. So I was really glad Mike and I got to go out there and see it. So the other benefits, 300 days of sunshine out there, year-round family fun, fishing, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, outstanding wine tasting that's just minutes away. So don't miss out on phase two grand opening pricing, August 24th and 25th, with 18 extra large RV lots starting from just $79,900. You'll have some undivided viewers as your neighbors. Call 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, or just go to NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. All right, just because we didn't have a live show doesn't mean we won't do a daily subscriber show poll today. I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, for tomorrow's primary election, what race are you most eager to see the results in? Governor, attorney general, your congressional race in your district, or other? The vast majority of people saying governor. I disagree. Did you think governor would be mine, Nicole?
No, because I feel like I know governor. I am excited maybe for AG and... maybe judge. I'm pretty excited.
Oh yeah. That's a good one. Wow. Right. You're tuned in. Yeah. Attorney general is mine only because you're right. I think for governor, we know who's going to advance. I mean, unless like there is some epic failure of polling,
we might take the day off,
which then we won't be here. But for attorney general, I'm very curious between Monica Dingra and Nick Brown, who gets through on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. Because Monica Dingra would be disastrous for our state. I mean, I can't even, way worse than Bob Ferguson. Oh, way worse. And so that to me is an unknown because Nick and Monica are polling pretty evenly. So I think Monica is the easier opponent for Pete Serrano because she is so extreme and statewide extreme candidates don't really win statewide.
I can't predict anything these days. Right. And so it scares me to have her on the ballot.
I feel too. So even though it's better for Pete, I would rather 100%. I would rather not have her on the ballot because I don't want the risk to be there.
Nope.
Like I can live with a Nick Brown because I think he's very similar to Bob Ferguson. Yep. So it'd kind of be a push. Let's see. Becky Langley says, I'm watching them all, but definitely governor is where it all starts for me. Jeff says the AG race for sure. I'll be tuning in from out of state tomorrow night, hoping to witness the call on Monica's campaign coming to a close. There will be much rejoicing. Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you though, we're locked and loaded on some Monica Dingra stories that we're going to roll right out if she makes it through. Let me see. Christine says, governor is my most important, followed closely by the AG race. Julie, governor, I'm curious whether Semi is going to bow out rather than split the votes in November. Well, he can't bow out now. There is no bowing out. So you're on the ballot. He's on the ballot. And you can't run like a writing campaign for a contest you were on the primary ballot for. So if he's not top two Tuesday, he's just out of the race. I hope though that whoever the whoever moves forward, there can be some coalescing amongst Republicans because you need it to beat Bob Ferguson. So we'll see what happens there. I'm curious. What was that?
Oh, I was going to say another one. OSBI.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't it be great if Reichel didn't even make the ballot?
Well, maybe, but I don't think the Democrat, because there's two Democrats, it's like, yeah, whatever. And I don't think the other guy would be any better than Reichel, and he might actually have an easier time winning.
Maybe, like, but I don't know. It's a nonpartisan role, right? And so hopefully people would actually vote based on things that candidates say. I think Reichel's just getting in based on name recognition.
Very possible.
So maybe people would have to do the work and actually figure out who to vote for.
The Times didn't even endorse Reichel because test scores aren't good. And that has to be, there has to be some judge of academic achievement. And we had him on and I said, you know, test scores aren't great. And he's like, well, that's not, you know, the end all be all. But he admitted, I said, if they were great, would you take responsibility for them? And he's like, well, that's a good point. So if test scores were through the roof good, they would say, oh, that's all me. It's similar to presidents with gas prices,
right?
Where they're like, oh, they're bad. Presidents aren't responsible for gas prices. Oh, they're good. Like, that's all me. I did that by myself. Donald Shaw, similar. I do not want to see Monica Dingwa go to the general election. She would be terrible for the state. Apparently, she just put in $250,000 of her own money into her campaign because her husband's very wealthy.
Yes.
Which is fine. I don't vilify rich people. I don't. See how that works? I think if you're a millionaire, good for you. I do think it's funny that she lies about her job, you know, and she doesn't even have, to my knowledge, she does not have a full-time job. The legislature is a part-time job and she is not with the prosecutor's office anymore. And so like, she's the wife of a rich guy. That's her job right now, right?
Full-time mom of older children.
Well, and that's fine. Her kids are older though. Yeah. I think she doesn't want to admit that she doesn't have a full-time job because most lawmakers aren't wealthy enough to only have like the, what, 20 grand they give you, if that, to be a lawmaker. So there's nothing wrong with being like a rich housewife mom,
right?
But own it. Don't claim that you're a prosecutor when you're really not, like you're like going fighting in a courtroom against criminals all the time. So that's the only issue I have with that. She's wealthy and she's got a lot of time on her hands. She's running for AG
before the election or before the primary. Do you get that back?
Yeah, I think there is a way to, if it's a surplus, if you haven't spent it all, I believe. Yeah. So, because you do it as a loan to your campaign, essentially.
Got it.
All right. So yeah, good stuff there. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, what's really sad, Nicole? We can't do comments.
I know.
You guys, I feel so bad. This never happened before. Full computer meltdown.
I mean, full meltdown.
Although Nicole will say, I kept my composure very well.
You did very well. Like, me too, by the way.
I'm just kidding. Yes. But you always keep your composure pretty well.
You say I get a little snotty and mean, but.
You know, sometimes it's a little snappy, but I do too. But I felt like we were both like, that's a God thing. We couldn't even do anything about it.
That was not even, there wasn't one thing touched that could have just like, you know, oh, you touched that wrong. No, it
was so funny because
to restart.
Now I'm not taking responsibility for it. However, we don't always restart the system. Like we had said, you know, we should do that, you know, give it a, and I insisted today. I was like, I insist that we restart the system, like 10 minutes to showtime. We were ready to go. And then it never turned back on. So I don't want to take a lot of responsibility for that. But anyway, okay, we are going to get to our closing sanity check coming up in a moment. First, gosh, especially if you looked at your 401k, which I highly advise against, but if you happened to, you're probably like, how can I save money right now? I recommend taking the First Mark Challenge. We've had so many undivided viewers and listeners who have taken the First Mark Challenge, and it's because it's a no-brainer. Totally free to take the challenge. And on the back end of it, you could end up saving money for the same insurance you already have. Or you could get a better rate for the same insurance you already have, or they might turn you away and say, you actually have really good insurance. And then you have the peace of mind knowing that you selected the correct insurance for your family and have the coverage you need in case something happens. Netta told us that she had finally got around to contacting First Mark about her insurance. And she said, she's so glad she did when she did, because she has, I don't know if she has a Kia or a Hyundai, because she listed both of them, but she has one of those two cars that gets stolen a lot. And she says that she was about to just not renew her current policy on that. But thankfully, First Mark reached back out to her to do the First Mark Challenge. And they said, do not cancel that policy, because those cars are nearly impossible to find insurance on right now. So she's like, thank God.
Which I made me laugh during Inslee's press conference. He said, thanks to Kia and Hyundai for creating these cars that we can now give rebates for, but you can't get them insured.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really true. Good luck getting those insured. She said, I'm so glad First Mark contacted me quickly so I could pay the current premium to keep my current coverage. Appreciated the chit chat and casualness answering my questions. And that's the thing about First Mark is they're always going to do the best thing for you. So somebody trying to sell you something you don't need would have been like, yeah, like, let's see if we can get you insurance on that Kia. Don't worry about paying the premium with some other company. And they didn't say that. They're like, no, you'll lose your coverage. Pay that. And I think that is really indicative of how good of a company they are and how they do want to do the right thing for their clients. And you never pay them anything. So firstmarkinsurance.com, take the First Mark challenge today. See if they can save you money on your insurance needs. firstmarkinsurance.com. With that, getting through today's show, I'm glad we're doing a show, even if it must be taped through a totally different system and be a complete pain in the ass. It is election day eve, and we're not going to leave you hanging. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Now, I don't know about you. Biden, I think, has been one of the best presidents in American history. Yeah, I mean, he's right up there, according to Nancy Pelosi. And I have to say, I fully agree. Right up there with the likes of Abraham Lincoln.
So he was in a good place to make whatever decision, the top of his game. Such a consequential president of the United States, a Mount Rushmore kind of president of the United States.
Are
want
you
to
really
know what comes next?
That he belongs up there on Mount Rushmore. What? Lincoln and Joe Biden.
But you got Teddy Roosevelt up there, and he's wonderful. I don't say take him down, but you can add Biden.
There you have it. One-term president who had to drop out of his race for re-election, carved into stone, according to Nancy Pelosi. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Remember, we are having a regular show tomorrow, but we will also have live election night coverage starting at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can join us for all the latest election results in the race for governor and on down. And so we'll have that. We'll be on for about as long as we need to be on. Expect about an hour or so.
God willing.
Hashtag... please, Jesus.
Daryl, hurry.
No, it'll be great. Daryl's coming on down to get things fixed today, so I think it'll be good. So we'll see you tomorrow, a double dose tomorrow, so maybe that'll make up for today. But we appreciate your support of the show, particularly during the election season. It helps us stay on the air. Does it? Does it help us stay on the air? It does. We're very grateful to be able to do this job full time and to be able to give you coverage of elections that you're not going to see or hear anywhere else. So if you'd like to sign up to support the show for $5 a month, you can do that at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.